Good morning. It's Thursday, July 11th. You've tuned into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY with your regular Thursday co-hosts, Jim and Jack. It's the 13th of July, and it is a Thursday. We have in studio with us this morning. In a little bit, we'll be in conversation with Jim Payne. He's the author of Chasing Thoreau, a book he wrote about following the trip of Henry David Thoreau, an adventure in paddling and philosophy, as is the subtitle of the book. Before we get into conversation with Jim, we should talk with the other Jim about the weather a little bit here.
There's two Jims in the studio this morning. And Jack, why aren't you a Jim? Then we could be triple Jim.
I know. How are we going to differentiate? You guys are both, and you kind of sound alike, too. It's going to be...
Well, we haven't heard a word yet from Jim, but we're saving that for a few moments. Hasn't this weather just been something else?
I've enjoyed it a great deal. It was a little too hot a few days ago, but...
I agree.
But, that's the beauty of living near a lake, is you can escape that.
You can jump or kayak in. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, the garden, it's looking beautiful. We pulled out garlic two nights ago, 50 heads that we planted last fall, and they are huge.
At what point do you have to worry about it being too hot? Things burning and stuff.
You keep a garden watered, but some of those little plants love as much heat, like tomatoes.
Tomatoes, sure.
Tomatoes, you can just give. We have little like cheesecloth over the lettuce. Lettuce. Oh, I'm fragile. I can't do it. That sort of thing. So lettuce, we put a cheesecloth over and. Let it survive the heat of the day. Mm-hmm. Things are just, the eggplant is, and looking beautiful. We're getting peas already. We've already gotten radishes the size of golf balls. This has been a good growing season. Now we just have to wait for the tomatoes to come in.
When does that happen, by the way? That's my favorite time of year.
It depends what kind of tomatoes you have. If you have like cherry tomatoes, they should be coming in shortly. But then if you have some of the larger ones that need a longer time on the vine, it all depends if they got starts in greenhouses back in February, or if they just got their little seedlings going in May. It all depends. There's a lot of variables, but we're heading into that magical huckleberry season. So
there you go again. That's a dangerous hobby.
Yeah,
we discussed that.
Everything stops with that. And we've got a beautiful day on the agenda, and let's turn our attentions to Jim Payne. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing on this morning?
Doing great. Good morning to you.
Well, it's good to have you here. And Jim is local author, adventurer. What other hats do you wear? Ex-professor. What else?
I'm active in the teen center, Sandpoint Teen Center. I've been a volunteer there for 10 years.
And what do you do?
Well, every afternoon I invent games and tasks for the youngsters.
Like, how fast does a snowflake fall? And we'll get to that in a second, because I just think that is so wonderful. Jim has just published his fourth book, am I not mistaken?
Fourth book of kayak adventures.
Fourth book of kayak adventures. And this one's called Chasing Thoreau, An Adventure in Paddling and Philosophy. Let's start a little. Let's go back before this book. How did you become interested in kayaking?
It started, 21 years ago. I was in Washington, D.C. at a think tank there for a year, and I said I needed some exercise.
Okay.
So I bought a kayak to just paddle around the Potomac River by the monuments, which I did in the afternoons. And then I said to myself, hey, this is a river. It goes somewhere. Why am I just paddling in a circle? Let me go to where it goes, which is Chesapeake Bay. So I set up the idea of just going down the Potomac River, and that was my first kayak adventure. That was in 96.
And since then, you've kayaked on the Thames in England, the Bio River in Chile.
The Obio, yes.
Yep, the Obio. How do you get your kayak, or do you rent a kayak when you get there?
This is a foldable kayak. They fold down. It's a skin that goes over a frame that you put together. It takes about an hour to do, and it's a lot of work because you're crawling and creeping on your knees and bending over. But it packs up into a backpack, which just goes as luggage on the train. And also trains and taxis that you have to take, yes.
How heavy is it when it's packed up?
The new one I got is, the Feathercraft, is 30 pounds.
You're kidding me.
Right.
Good Lord. As you get lighter in a kayak, what do you give up? You know, in other words, as opposed to a heavier kayak.
Well, the two I had, I started with a Klepper, which was 50 pounds foldable. The big difference is the Klepper was much wider, and it, in fact, saved my life, I think, several occasions when some really violent water was happening for one reason or another, and mm-hmm. I didn't turn over. The new Feathercraft I've had for the last about five trips is much narrower, and it does turn over, and I have turned over in it, including once just testing it out down in front of the Edgewater in the winter. I was getting ready to go to Chile, and I turned over into cold water, and I couldn't get out.
That could be challenging.
That was actually, of all my adventures, the title of that chapter is In My Own Backyard. Of all my adventures, I was closest to death right in my own backyard down there at the Edgewater.
And you continue to kayak?
Yes. I'm a slow learner.
Okay, now, we got you on the water.
Well, I was just curious. So are you able to then turn? I mean, you're kind of tucked in. The listeners don't have pictures, but you're pretty well tucked in. Are you able to right yourself?
That's called the Eskimo roll. Yes.
Yeah.
If you have a spray skirt that is attached all around the combing of the cockpit, then you can Eskimo roll. You're upside down, and you reach out with your paddle, and with a twist of your hips and so forth, you right yourself. I practiced doing that and could do it on occasion years and years ago, but it's actually like military aircraft flying. You have to keep it up all the time. If you don't do it every couple of weeks and practice it, you lose it. So I've lost it, and I... Also, when your kayak is loaded with your gear and stuff for camping, it's harder to turn over. So I don't wear this spray skirt most of the time, and I just put it on for rain.
So when you do turn over, your escape, you have to kind of crawl out. Like,
yes,
yeah,
you swim mm-hmm. out of it.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I'm just fascinated by the near-death experience. Right in front of Trinity was the closest.
Yeah.
That's when you turned over?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was getting ready to go to Chile. This is why I was there in February.
Yeah.
Because Chile's summer and fall is February. So, and I had a new paddle on this new kayak, and I went out and on the empty docks there. In fact, I had to go past the shelf of ice to find the water. I went down into it, and I said, boy, this is a tipsy boat compared to my old boat, and let's see how tipsy it is.
Oh.
the absolutely stupidest thing. I rocked it back and forth, and I expected the reaction of my Klepper, which, as you got further over, it resisted, and you couldn't turn it over. If you wanted to turn it, you had to dive out of the Klepper to get a turnover.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected that reaction. Well, this was not that. It was just a banana peel, and all of a sudden I was going over. And so swam out, but the dock was about 3 feet above me, and I could reach it with my hands, but I couldn't pull myself up just, you know, with my arms, with my wet clothes and everything. So there I was in the freezing water, teeth chattering, really gasping for breath, screaming. Nobody was there.
And people at Trinity with their.
It was 10 o'clock in the morning.
With their brunch and whatever, looking out there. Oh,
no, they weren't. Nobody was there. I'm sure the restaurant was. That was the worst. I mean, on a Thursday at 10 o'clock in the morning in February, nobody is anywhere in Trinity.
Right.
And
Here's this drama happening mm-hmm. right on our shore, and we're just going about our day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one confused sadist out on the balcony of their hotel room sipping his coffee.
Coffee, yeah.
I wonder what that guy's up to.
Oh, honey, come here. Look. Yeah. Look at this guy.
So
how did you get out? How did you get out? Obviously, you're not still there.
Can I say read the book?
Your first trip was, you said, down the Potomac. And how long are these trips that you're taking? The first one was...
They vary. That was just 4 days.
How many miles?
I think it was just about 75 miles. Quite a beginner's trip. The longest I've taken was in one sitting, so to speak, that is without going back home and coming back to it, was from New York City to Quebec City. Started and went up the Hudson River. And anyway, I won't tell you all the waterways. You finally end up coming across Lake Champlain and down the St. Lawrence River. That was a month I was on the water, and that was something like 550 miles.
Wow. Cool. And camping along the way? Staying
yes.
In,
you're, I'm a, what's called a commando camper. There's no way you can arrange or anything. You just have to take what you can get and sneak around, really. Obviously, if you camp on someone's lawn, and everybody in the world is going to be calling the sheriff. So you... try to find a patch of trees that nobody is noticing and slip in there. And
That's what they call it on the Appalachian Trail. You have shelters, but when you're in between the shelters, it's either also called stealth camping.
Yeah.
Either stealth camping or commando, where you find a place that's not designated. And given what Jim's doing, every place is commando because there's really not specific stops along
right.
the way.
And I've actually... It turns out if there are people there, this is always a benefit. Whenever I've stopped and said, hey, is it okay to camp here? I get invited home and given supper and things like that. It's when there's no one there, but you know there are windows and people may be looking and wondering. That's the troublesome situation.
That's one of the, when I was reading Chasing Thoreau, the joys of meeting people along the way, the unexpected person who's on the shore or right. wherever. That's one of the... Let's talk about how you made the... A lot of people would go, I'm just going to have kayak adventures and do it. But you're writing about them. How did you make the decision or what went into the decision to write about your experience, not only to have them, but to write about them?
Right. I did not intend to write. I've just found them so exhilarating. There's the other book, A Will to Discover, my first chapter is entitled A Dram of Anxiety. And the theory in there, which I really believe, is that when you're a little bit scared, which you bound to be on any kind of long-distance kayak trip, you pay much more attention to everything and it anchors itself in your mind much more. I remember my kayak trips, 10, 15 years ago, whereas what was happening on July 23 and Sam Point walking down the street, it's completely washed out. So these were very riveting, interesting episodes for me. So I found, I was writing about them afterward, mm-hmm. just making notes. I don't even know for whom, but I had, write-ups of them. And then quite a few years, the first One Inch Above the Water came out in 2008, and that was... 12 years after the Potomac, mm-hmm. first Potomac one. The idea of writing it up into a book evolved in that I just was so engrossed with the experience that I had to tell people about it.
That's very Thoreauvian because he went down the Concord Merrimack Rivers in 39, I believe, with his brother, and then he didn't write or finish the book until he was at Walden in 1845.
That's right. Well, and even later than that, right.
And so let's talk about Chasing Thoreau.
Yes. Well, he wrote the way that started. For me, it's very important for the trip to have a meaningful purpose or tied in with something.
Okay.
I need to get fired up. Lots of people say, hey, there's this river in Canada. Don't you want to go down it? And no, I don't. So I have to have a reason to do it. And
besides kayaking.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And Thoreau wrote the book called A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers,
mm-hmm.
about the trip he and his brother took in a rowboat that they built down the Concord.
Of course.
up the Merrimack River. Yeah, he was a very handy, by the way, in terms of mechanics and stuff, very handy guy. He worked in his dad's pencil manufacturing mm-hmm. business and invented pencil making machines. He was also a surveyor, Thoreau was, a land surveyor.
He built his cabin at Walden Pond. And
yeah.
when you read Walden, you get it very detailed, the expense of it, as well as measurements and everything.
Yeah. And just the example of his skill, I paddling up the Merrimack River, there's a island, Deer Island, that Thoreau mentions passing in his book and saying, he said it was some 60 acres, this island, just paddling by it. And I said, how can anybody know, you know, how big an island? So I went to Google and blew up the map and measured it, multiplied it mm-hmm. out, and it came out like 59 acres.
yeah.
He was really talented. So anyway, getting back to the story, he took this river trip with his brother and wrote a book about it. And I got the book and I said, now that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to copy that river trip that he took. And of course, this got me into studying Thoreau, reading his stuff, reading biographies about him,
mm-hmm.
so that I was really chasing Thoreau both physically on the river, do his thing, but also intellectually of what his ideas were. And it turns out that quite a few events happened that dramatized his ideas, so that it really is an adventure in paddling and philosophy.
The book is, by the way, Chasing Thoreau, and the book that Thoreau wrote, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers. But you were first kind of, obviously you'd heard of Thoreau, but this was, you hadn't had a lifelong relationship
with his work
or anything.
I just recognized the name like everybody else does, yes.
Yeah, you didn't, you came to it kind of late.
Very late, yes. And he also grew on me. My initial reaction was not too positive. As a writer, he's not too clear. And like even this use of that or this, you say, what is the referent of that? And so, you know, at first I was picky, you might say. But the more I found out about him, the more I read and read about him and read him, my opinion kept going up until he's really very high on my list. There's also, I got to confess, what you might say, a family resemblance, in that he wrote his book on Concord Merrimack. It was not a very good seller. In fact, it was deadly. And he self-published it, and he had the books in his house and said, he joked to friends, he said, I have a library of 800 books in my house, and I'm the author of most of them.
Most of them.
Well, I'm also in that boat. I wrote that first One Inch Above the Water, River Trip. It was not a big bestseller, and I self-published it, and I have piles of it, stacks of it in my house. So we really are brothers under the skin. So there was that tie.
Tell me about the logistics of, did you put in at the same place as Thoreau and his brother, getting your kayak out to Concord and that sort of thing?
I think he didn't say exactly where, but I think it's very close. I stayed in a bed and breakfast in the village. It's a pretty swanky village, by the way, now, with the house prices all over $1 million. It's a suburb of Boston. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in a bed and breakfast, and then took several trips hiking out to the Concord River along a road. And he describes, he said, we came upon the bridge, the famous Concord Bridge that started the Revolutionary War, and he mentioned it. And I did, too, in about what felt like the 1 mile that it took him. So I started close, and I got out and had an adventure there that you can read about. Met a British soldier,
mm-hmm.
all in his scarlet uniform. I said, wait a minute, we won that war. What are you still doing here?
Get over it.
And he was actually a young boy, homeschool boy, that was acting the part of a redcoat.
Is that bridge, is that preserved historically, or has that been replaced time and
it
again?
It fell, it collapsed and everything, but it's been rebuilt there.
Yes. It's a replica? I mean, it looks the same as it did back then.
I can't vouch for that.
Oh. But
in fact, I would say probably not, because this is a pretty good stone bridge that's going to last forever, and I think the other one was kind of wood, and that's why it collapsed.
A lot of your books take place, it's kind of on these, they're well-traveled rivers. They're like the Potomac, the Thames, if I'm pronouncing that right. And then in this, you're kind of going through not the wilderness,
right?
Like a lot of people,
good point. Yeah.
Paddlers out here would do.
Yes, I've come to call myself a social kayaker.
Uh-huh.
And more, actually, a way to think of it is there are travel writers, okay, like Paul Thoreau, that go to places, they drive or fly there, that are places of known interest, and then write about them. And that's sort of what I do, only I get there by kayak. So this gives you a storyline, a certain amount of suspense, a plot line of can he get from A to B in the thing. And the other thing is, I say the dram of anxiety theory, it puts me in a much more alert. You know, I'm not just, you know, punching the clock and saying, okay, now I saw Valley Forge, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really paying attention. But people are also very interested in you as a lone kayaker, and they feel pity for you. and so you get to meet a lot of people in warm and candid circumstances. So you find out about their lives and get really taken into their lives.
We're here with Jim Payne, the author of Chasing Thoreau, An Adventure in Paddling and Philosophy. And we're talking about his latest book and the adventure of attempting to duplicate Henry David Thoreau's journey on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers. We're going to take a music break, and the music break is going to be two parts. By the way, you're with Jim and Jack on The Morning Show. I'm going to, first of all, it was on this date in 1956 that Elvis Presley recorded Don't Be Cruel and Hound Dog. Hound Dog and becomes one of Elvis Presley's best sellers. We're going to play that, and then I'm going to give a backstory when we're done with Jim Payne and talking about his book and Thoreau, a little backstory to Hound Dog. But here is Elvis Presley on this date in 1956. That would be what, 61 years ago that this song was released.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
That was Elvis Presley, released on this date in 1956, Hound Dog. And we're going to give a backstory to that song later on. We're here with Jim Payne, and he is Chasing Thoreau, An Adventure in Paddling and Philosophy. Okay, you're on the water. You've gotten your first day. What's it like, this adventure that you have looked so forward to, and you're finally there?
Yes. Well, I say you don't know. I guess you'd call it a tactic. It's not to research the thing. Maybe you could say I'm lazy, which is part of it.
You're an adventurer.
But I think the surprises are part of it. So I'm like on the Concord River, I didn't know what that would be. And I thought there might be rapids to worry about. And I find it's very placid when I go in, and there was a kayaker there, and he said, oh, it's dammed up. So it's
That's
actually
right.
The Concord River all the way practically down to Lowell is a lake, you know, kind of like the Pend'Oreille River.
So you have water. You have to deal with the changes from 1839 to the 21st century,
yes,
and the dams and the way in which the water, maybe irrigation ditches coming off it. I have to admit, you know, I taught 19th century American literature, and I've never made the pilgrimage to Concord.
Oh, well, you've got to do that.
Great. Want to find
You've got to see Walden Pond. Like Walden Pond, I have a whole chapter on Walden Pond that really surprised me.
It should.
And
yes.
And I hiked out there. It's about 2 miles from Concord the day before. And I saw on my map, there's a lot of ponds. And I said, oh, here's one. It's called Fairyland Pond. I said, oh, I got to see that. And it was not far from the path. So I went, and it was a slimy, algae-covered lily pads all over it. You know, you'd never think of wanting to swim in it or even wade in it. In fact, you'd figure you could walk across the top of it with all the debris and organic stuff. So I thought Walden Pond would be that way. What do you think, Jim? Would it be?
Well, I've read Walden, so I know.
Okay.
It has some of the clearest ice.
Okay.
The clarity of it is incredible.
Yeah. And what's also interesting, though, when I came to it, is it's way down. It's sunken, I'd say about 50, 60 feet, 70 feet below the sort of level of the land. And so you say that's a double reason why it'd be a kind of sinkhole with everything just flowing into it and collecting there. It's not. Yeah. There's mm-hmm. no vegetation mm-hmm. there. There's no lily pads, no algae. It's crystal clear. I say, I guess, throw makes it out.
There's no surface water flowing in it or out of it.
Right.
It's called a kettle lake,
right.
A big chunk of ice as the glaciers moved around, dropped off there. And it's deep, about 100 feet deep at its deepest
104,
point.
104, and throw measured it, making many dozens of measurements.
When you read that chapter in Walden about how he measures the depth of the lake and the thickness of the ice, the guy was incredible. And you pick up on that, too, that notion of natural curiosity, because you end your book with measuring how fast does a snowflake fall.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's very Thoreauvian, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Well, I realized that. That's why I say the more I got into this, the more I was copy him, chasing him.
Well, I have to admit, the word chasing, if you read Thoreau, you're never going to catch him.
That's true. That's a good point.
You know, caught Thoreau, you know, not a chance. I mean, you will always be chasing Thoreau. I think on his essay called Walking, he says that I'm my own best company when I walk, because if I walk with someone else, I have to wait for that person and I have to compromise my stride.
Yeah, he was a fast walker.
You bet. He just chunked it up. So he was a loner. He was
and a fast paddler, by the way. Those guys did amazing distances.
Something like 120 miles,
I think.
They did a chunk of distance.
In just a week, up and back, yeah.
So are you... Thoreauvian personality-wise, social-wise, he was very independent, solo, curmudgeon-like?
Yes, I would say so. Well, and in fact, one trait, it's an advantage and disadvantage maybe, and this is, he was most extreme in this, in being insensitive to what an audience wanted.
That's right.
And if you want to be a best-selling author, that's no good. You gotta be hearing what people want. And he absolutely had a tin ear on this. And that's why he wasn't popular in his lifetime, and why stuff like even Walden itself wasn't any big deal. It only was discovered, well, you can know more about this than I do, but like in the 1890s, 1900s, like 40, 50 years after his death.
Oh, absolutely. He is an individual who was not a... how do I want to use the word, a planned thinker? In other words, he did not plan. I mean, he was very, like when you read A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, you think, oh, this is going to be about the water voyage.
Yeah.
But he's got like 40 pages on friendship, you know, that you get the sense that the journey was a jumping off point to talk about whatever he wants to talk about. And
right.
He was not very popular because he was very critical of the government, very critical of social mores.
And friends and neighbors.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he would say things like, my friends and neighbors are wrongheaded.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely.
Well, if you're a friend and neighbor and you read that, you say, what the hell is this guy?
Yeah, he was very, but he had the support of his family and that he could retreat to from his little small cabin. Tell me, what was one of the things that you learned, not only about Thoreau, but about yourself going down that river?
Wow. Well, on the authority, I guess the authority thing came out. I have a chapter on how Thoreau questioned authority, and a little thing happened to me that I really was shocked. I got to the sea. I changed. I went all the way down the Merrimack River to the Atlantic Ocean to Newburyport, and I got there and I came ashore at a municipal pump out station, where there was a municipal employee there with his uniform on. It was a dirty uniform, but and his cap with its visor. And so I said, "Are there any places to lodge here in Newburyport?" And he said, "No, nothing here." And I said, "Wow, you mean this whole tourist destination town doesn't have any hotels?" "Nah, nothing a person could use. No, you got to go down the river across the other side. There's a motel there." So I took his word for it. And anyway, I spent most of the day looking for the motel that was closed, and then coming back and finding that Newburyport had a dozen hotels and bed and breakfasts. So this guy was just totally wrong. And I said, why did I believe him? If he'd been just somebody on a street corner had said that, I'd say, well, that's one man's opinion. I better check it out because it doesn't seem reasonable. But because he was a government official, I trusted it. And I said, I've been writing all my life as a political scientist about this. I call this an illusion of government competence. That we have, and there I fell victim to it. And of course, it ties in with Thoreau, is that he really, from the get-go, had no such illusion. He was very rare this way.
Well, he was the authority of one, and the self is the primary evaluator, judger, maker of decisions. And that's one of the frustrating aspects that Emerson found in him. And you really didn't get a sense of how Emerson, who oftentimes would pride himself that Thoreau was his disciple, until you read Emerson's eulogy at Thoreau's funeral.
Yeah, he was pretty angry.
Angry. He totally missed what Thoreau was about. Here is a person living according to the rules, the principles that Emerson set forth in his many essays, and Emerson couldn't recognize it because he also felt that Thoreau should have been in politics, he should have been a leader of this country, whereas Thoreau was more than happy to be a leader of a Huckleberry Party that you find out in Civil Disobedience. He doesn't pay taxes. He ends up in jail. What does he do when he gets out of jail? Goes off huckleberry picking. He's more concerned about living his life, not anybody else's.
All right.
And so, Jim, you're down at the end of your adventure chasing Thoreau. What are you chasing now?
You mean in terms of adventure? My next project, I've got the plane ticket, so I guess it's going to happen, is I go to Holland for a bicycle trip, another bicycle trip. That's what I've turned more to bicycling. Well, bicycling in Holland, especially.
That's like tulips.
there's just so many reasons. I mean, it's a flat country. It's all set up for bicycles. Of all the countries in the world, it's the biking country. And they speak really excellent English, so you can have serious conversations with them.
One of my favorite countries.
I love it, yeah.
You know, when you're in Amsterdam and you're trying to cross the street, you're looking for vehicles. Then you need to take a step back and look for cyclists because they have another inner lane. And have you found that experience in Amsterdam that you've got to pay attention
but
otherwise?
The fascinating thing about all those bicycles is they do not have rearview mirrors, none of them. And the one I rented didn't. And at first, you know, I said, whoa, you know, how... And then I realized what's happening is they are feeling their way. They are anticipating other people in their minds. They don't need to see them. Okay,
it's a Dutch gene. They're born with it.
Well, even more than I consider them more advanced in terms of civilization than like us by maybe 100 years. And this is one sign of it, I think, that they anticipate that there are other human beings out there in the environment and how to get along with them. And I wasn't trained to that. I believed, in the right of way or not. I'm right, he's right. And they more or less feel their way of, there is a feeling of a right of way, but it's shaped according to the situation.
Well, one of the things, I've been to Amsterdam many times, and I've never seen two people get off their bikes and fight or get upset or whatever. They have this sense of flowing. I read an interesting book on the history of Amsterdam, and one of the interesting aspects of it, this little side thing before we get back to it, is that what made Holland, the Netherlands, unique is that they claimed land from the sea. So they did not have a medieval hierarchy of a lord and that sort of thing, is that whoever claimed land from the sea was the owner of it. So you have a very egalitarian, you could go out, Jack, and claim 5 acres from the sea and it's yours. So ownership was totally different.
Yeah, they were a democracy or a republic even before the United States was?
They were so far advanced, mainly because they reclaimed land. Okay, are you going to write about it, Jim?
No, I didn't write about the last one. It's interesting. I got a lot of stuff to write about. More projects.
What about around here? Where do you like to paddle or pedal?
Well, I put in at Memorial Field. That's closest to my home, so that's the easy one. And I'm planning a couple overnights to go. I think going down, I wrote that up, by the way. It was in Sandpoint Magazine, of a trip I took. That was last summer, down the Pendere River to Medellin Falls. And you can portage two dams, one of which was pretty difficult, but fun to do in retrospect. But anyway, you can just go down to, if you go down to Albany Falls, there's a campground there, so you don't have to go around the dam. That's what I'm going to do and come back.
I just have this image of Jim walking around with his backpack on and his kayak, walking around and, here's a place to put in, and you take off your... I just find the notion of, somehow I've always thought of a kayak as a fixed entity. It's a piece of something, not something that you can fold and collapse and take with you.
But there is a problem that this does not come apart or go together easily. It is, like an hour strenuous job. It's like a day's work. So when you come to a town, and this is one, I kayaked in Holland. I did a trip there too on the IJssel River branch of the Rhine. And when I come to a town, you have this dilemma of what do I do with the kayak? And it's not just snap your fingers. If you say, I'm going to pack it up, then, it's this 1 hour grueling job. And then you got this thing on your back. So you're not very free to wander around town.
That's a lot of weight.
So it's, if you don't know where you're going, if you're exploring, say, trying to find a bed and breakfast, you don't. So that's a disadvantage of kayak. That's why I like the bike. You're in town on the bike. In fact, you've got your transportation to go around town and find things, restaurants and bed and breakfast.
When do you take off for Netherlands?
September.
Okay.
I go just after the summer tourist season.
The tourist season, you bet.
Things are open for me because I don't like advance reservations anywhere, and I like to be able to knock on a door and they say, yeah, we have a vacancy.
And how long will you be gone pedaling?
2 weeks.
Excellent. Well, maybe we can get you to come back whether you write anything or not and talk about.
Well, my project is a little scary in that the Zuider Zee that you know about.
Right.
It's a 15-mile dam that holds the sea back, and there's, I assume there's got to be a bike trail being
Holland.
But there I am for 15 miles out in the middle of just on a dam that goes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get tired or get a muscle cramp or something, what'll happen? So,
flat tire.
Hope not. Oh, yeah. Don't mention it.
Yeah. Well, we thank you so much for being here, Jim.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
And your book is available throughout town?
Yes, yes.
Once again, Chasing Thoreau, An Adventure in Paddling and Philosophy. It's
and you can also tell them how thick it is.
Jack, I'm holding it up.
About maybe 5/16 of an inch. Okay. No, 5/8 of an inch.
My point is it is the most painless, interesting introduction to Henry David Thoreau you're going to find. You dispute that, Jim?
Not one bit. Thoreau, much like his attitude towards other people, that's his attitude towards the reader. His notion is, I wrote it, you read it. I'm not going to, I wrote it according to how I wanted to write it and on my own terms. And if you read it, you figure out your own terms, why to read it and everything like this. He does not.
You have to study it. In other words,
And you have to be patient with Thoreau because he had you mentioned about his natural curiosity and measuring ice and the depth of Walden Pond. He used to brag that you could just blindfold me and drop me anywhere in the area of Walden Pond, and I can tell you by the vegetation within 1 or 2 days what time of the year it is. He was such a detailed observer.
He was a naturalist. Yes.
Absolutely. Scientist. And he's also a Harvard graduate, which sort of helped.
In theology.
In theology. Well, everybody at that time at Harvard was majored in theology. But a fascinating man and so much a part, I think, of America's cultural identity. And it comes out at a time with Ralph Waldo Emerson. And one of the things that I would tell my students is if you have to pick a 5-year period of American literature, when you wanted to, from 1850 to 55, you have Moby Dick, Scarlet Letter, Walden, the first edition of Whitman's Leaves of Grass, and a collection of Emerson's essays. So that 5-year period from 1850 to 55 is, and then just looming on the horizon, I think in 56, if I'm not mistaken, is Uncle Tom's Cabin. But Jim, it is so good to have you here, and keep on having adventures.
Okay.
And don't do anything that, would keep you from coming back to us. I mean, what I mean?
That's the end of adventure when you say that.
Don't. You want to just have more. But can we maybe have you come
back? You can
back?
Tell me to be careful.
Exactly.
That's what my wife does all the time.
Be careful on your own terms.
It doesn't do any good.
that's the line, it doesn't do any good. You're going to just do it on your own terms. And that's wonderful. Again, Jim Payne, Chasing Thoreau.
Would you tell us a little bit, Jim Healy, about the song Hound Dog?
Okay.
As you promised.
As I promised, Elvis Presley did a version of Hound Dog that was initially done about 3 years earlier by Big Mama Thornton. And I want you to listen to this version, and then I'll give you a backstory via Alice Walker and Color Purple. But here is Big Mama Thornton's original version of Hound Dog that Elvis Presley takes a spin off of. Just listen to it, and then we'll talk about it a little. But thanks again, Jim, for being here.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
That was Big Mama Thornton, her version of Hound Dog. And I tell you, Jack, what's interesting is that she sings it, and her audience is an ex-lover, a guy who sneaks around, you're like a hound dog. Here's Presley singing it, and it's a song that needs to be sung by a woman. Mm-hmm. And I can remember, I think when he was on Ed Sullivan, there's like a basset hound on a little platform, and he was singing to it. It makes no sense that the song be sung by a man. And Alice Walker wrote a short story called 1955. I'll just speak about it briefly. Track it down. It is really worth looking at. And it's the story of, I'm trying to remember her name, Gracie Mae Still. And there's a knock on her door, and she recognizes it's a young singer by the name of Trainer. And she just plinks around on the guitar, and she has a different man with her every time he knocks on her door. But as he becomes, and he wants something from her, but he can't articulate it. And it's that, you know, in one sense, he has appropriated her song, but not having the experience behind it. And that's what I feel what's interesting about Hound Dog, that was released on this date in 1956, is that Presley's song makes no sense whatsoever. A woman needs to be the singer of it, because you ain't nothing but a hound dog just hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the backstory.
I would also say, I mean, just personally, even though Elvis Presley, I mean, not to take anything away from him, I think he's one of the greatest vocalists of the 20th century, or, well, ever, in the history of recorded music. But I think Big Mama Thornton's version there is the more expressive and interesting.
Oh,
I like that.
Don't you come around here no more. Bow wow to you. And, of course, she's also the one who sang and wrote Ball of Chain, which we know Janis Joplin will take it and do a Janis Joplin song version of it. So let's start talking about some of the upcoming events.
I know. We've only got a few minutes here.
You're on first.
I'll get you. Okay. We missed it, the library expansion discussion, but it was just yesterday, and I wonder how that went. I know the remodel is, the groundbreaking, I think, officially happened at the East Bonner County Library, and I'm sure if you stay tuned to the morning show, you'll be hearing more about that later. But STEM in the Park, STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics in the Park at Travers Park, which is at 2100 Pine Street. If you've never been out to Travers Park, held from 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. today, Thursday, and that's every Thursday through July 27th, so we got a few more to go. Bring a lunch and come do some science and building projects geared towards youths in grade 1st through 5th, but all are welcome. Call Suzanne at the East Barnard County Library Youth Services at 263-6930. For more information, or call Sandpoint Parks and Rec at 263-3613.
And starting today and running through Saturday, the 13th through the 15th, there is the Sandpoint Area Seniors Garage Sale at 820 Main Street. It says here, loads of stuff. And let me tell you, the Sandpoint Area Seniors do a bang-up job. And this is one way that they try to raise funds for all of the good things that they do there. And because it says all proceeds from the sale go to the Sandpoint Area Seniors Vital Programs for our community's elders. So that is this Thursday. It's going to be starting up in 5 minutes, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday through Saturday at 820 Main Street.
I didn't know it started today. Early bird day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Five minutes.
Oh, okay. I bet somebody's turning their car right now.
Just absolutely.
Redirect. We're gonna go. A conversation about conflict tonight at Columbia Bank from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. in the community room. International mediator Kenneth Cloak hosts a talk entitled "A Conversation About Conflict: What Causes It, What It Means, and How to Handle It Better." Cloak is a resident of Hope, Idaho, and founder of the Center for Dispute Resolution in California and the globally based Mediators Beyond Borders. He is the featured interview subject in the summer 2017 issue of Sandpoint Magazine, if you've read that, sponsored by Sandpoint Magazine and 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio, this radio station. That's, again, a conversation about conflict tonight from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Columbia Bank building in the community room at 414 Church Street. Coming up also later on today at 5:30 p.m., an astronaut is at the library. An evening with astronaut John Phillips starting at 5:30 p.m. tonight. Phillips will discuss his experiences at the International Space Station. Call 263-6930 for more information about astronauts at the library.
And also going on tonight, as if none of those other items tickle your fancy, tonight at the Panada Theater, a screening of the New York Film's Critics Series movie called Blind. And that's going to be at 7:30. And I've only seen the trailer of it. I don't know much about it. Alex Baldwin and Demi Moore. And I'd like to see it, but I won't be able to because I'll be doing my folk show tonight at 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a couple weeks ago, I did folk songs that had even numbers in their titles. Now I'm going to do folk songs that have odd numbers in their titles, like 1, 3, 5, 7.
Yeah.
And the reason why I do that is that it's just an arbitrary way to get together a group of songs that I might not necessarily play at any other time.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a phony way to get a bunch of... And it's also uh-huh. challenging, you know.
Yeah, I'll say. Odd numbers. I can't think of anything right off the... Well, that you would consider folk. I can think of some rock and roll songs, but what do you
got? I could do a whole hour of just one, with one songs, early uh-huh. one morning, Bob Dylan, and then there's just a bunch mm-hmm. of one songs, but I also go up, I think the highest number I do is 31. It's called, by the New Lost City Ramblers, 31 Depression Blues.
Ooh.
That's 1931, but it's still odd. But tonight at the Panada Theater at 7:30, Blind, and let's real quickly, the lineup tonight is 7 o'clock Americana Backroads with Dusty, 8 o'clock Live from the Divide, and 9 o'clock the first hour of the folk show live with Jim Healy, and then two more hours of folk music.
Folk show continues, yeah.
Rock and roll, you bet.
Also going on tonight, it's the unveiling of the art for the festival at Sandpoint.
Festival out in Dover.
Uh-huh, that is correct. It is free and open to the public. Festival@sandpoint.com for more information about that, but it's out at Dover Bay. The Festival at Sandpoint official artwork will be unveiled. I wonder what that looks like this year. We're going to have to check that out. It's not something you can really talk about too much on the radio, of course. Picture.
But what that does mean is that the festival, we're getting closer mm-hmm. and closer to it. How exciting. Less than a month off.
Yeah. Going on tomorrow night at the Beer Hall, McDuff's Beer Hall, that is, at 220 Cedar Street. Live music with Ron Green. He's from Coeur d'Alene, comes up. Joining the fun this night is the Old Tin Can Food Truck, serving up burgers. Free and open to the public, 21 years of age and up. Ron Green will be here from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Paul Thorne is in concert on the 14th tomorrow at the Panada Theater. A concert starting at 9 p.m., doors open at 8 p.m., a Southern rock, country, Americana, and blues singer-songwriter whose style is a mix of blues, country, and rock. Opening of the night is Alice Drinks the Kool-Aid. Tickets are available at Eichhardt's and the Evans Brothers Coffee.
Let me just say, attending a punk concert now at the Panada Theater is first rate. Cowboy mm-hmm. Junkies were there last weekend on Saturday.
Did you catch it?
I worked the concessions.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But the sharpness of it, it's not overwhelming. It doesn't have to be blaring. What a concert venue it's turned into, the Panada Theater with its sound system. Two thumbs up on that. So Paul Thorne tomorrow night, it's got to be good.
Yeah, they did recently do a major upgrade to a lot of their equipment, including the sound system.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's Paul Thorne tomorrow night at the Panada Theater. There's a DJ at the 219, DJ Josh will be also at the 219, sort of kitty corner across the street from 9 p.m. to midnight. The Teen Writers Club meets tomorrow at the Sandpoint Library at 3:30 in the afternoon. In collaboration, peer reviews, brainstorming activities, writing supplies, and refreshments are provided on the second and fourth Friday of every month. There's a basic computer class going on at the Sandpoint Library at 8:15 a.m. on Saturday. Subjects rotate each week. It's held every Saturday. Call the library at 263-6930 for more information about that. And live music at the 219 with Devin Wade on Saturday night from 9 p.m. till midnight. One of the area's best country rock bands, the Devin Wade Band. It's not an evening with Devin Wade. It's the full band from 9 p.m. to midnight at the 219, probably out on the back patio.
One last thing. Saturday morning, let's back up. The Farmers Market. Open from 9 to 1 at Farman Park, and the gardens are starting to produce. I mean, they have been for several weeks now, but it's a great social event. Not only can you get grown produce, baked goods, arts and crafts, and listen to live music, you get to see your friends. And it's just a joyful morning. So head on down to Farman Park, 9 to 1.
I got two more for Sunday, the Bonner County Garden Tour, very quickly because we're out of time. 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 spectacular gardens on the tour. bcgardeners.org for more information about that. The tour is one of the major fundraisers conducted annually by the BCGA, and the money raised goes to support home horticultural educational programs. Contact Gaia Swinford at 265-2070 or email bcgardeners@gmail.com. And then Open Orchestra Camp is coming up at the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint from 9 a.m. to noon from July 17th through the 21st for ages 9 and older. I had one more little thing written down here. There is a book signing going on this Saturday. I believe it's Ken Fishman will be at the Corner Bookstore, which is no longer on that corner. It's on the other corner now. It's
the other Corner Bookstore.
Yeah, the other Corner Bookstore.
Not the other Corner Bookstore, but the other corner.
The same bookstore. Yeah, I just moved. anyway, that's on Saturday. I think Saturday afternoon around 2 o'clock. And finally, we are out of time, but there is a new show on KRFY, Jazz on Sunday Evenings. It's Jazz Over Sandpoint.
I did tune in.
Me
and,
too.
Excellent information from John. If you love jazz, you'll love the show because you'll also get a nice, he provides a great context for the music. And you don't have to know anything about jazz, but he'll put in a context and make what you're listening to just wonderful.
I think I had an excellent Sunday night in part because of that, that soundtrack that he
provides.
It was great.
It was first rate.
We are out of time, so let's say it's time for...
Get into Otto after Bird Note.
After Bird Note, it's time for Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio, broadcasting out of Ponderay with studios in downtown Sandpoint.